Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez. We kick off October with a lot of boxing. Yes, it is Socktoberfest. Joining me from San Francisco, the Bay Area, where he left his heart, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, welcome aboard.
Steve, I've finally mounted my autographed copy of a poster of Tito's Punch. That's Tito Trinidad's Punch. It is Rocktoberfest. Let's see some. I like your Socktoberfest. It's a lot of good fights. Triple header this weekend. I cannot wait for it with one of the top fights I've been waiting for all year. Well, at least since they announced it kind of last minute because it's the PBC. But Steve, happy Monday. How you doing?
I am doing well. We've got a lot to talk about. I know we're going to have phone calls, but jump on in. This is episode 647. That number, we'll take your calls in about 20 to 25 minutes, 347-215-7598. And if you want to tweet at us, please do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Let's get started with round number one. It's showtime from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, a triple header of action in the 154-pound title. We got more belts than Birkenstock here. For the WBA title, Arislan De Lara takes on Terrell Gaucher. For the WBC strap, Jermell Charlo takes on the young upstart Erickson Lubin. And for the IBF title, the thundering Jarrett Hurd takes on Austin Trout. Gabe, unless Lara has gotten old overnight, or at least from the time we saw him against Yuri Foreman in January, I expect this to be kind of a routine Arislan 12-round whitewash where he cruises home relatively easy. And I don't have much anticipation over it, but the Charlo Lubin Hurd Trout fight, I think, are very good matchups and I think hold a lot of intrigue.
You know, one of the guys I really trust in the industry when it comes down to breaking down styles and talking about fights is Stephen Breadman Edwards. He looked at this Lara fight, this Gaucher fight. I was reading his column, and he says about Gaucher that he's the kind of guy that you look at him and he's not spectacular at any one thing. I think a lot of boxing fans would agree with me. They're like, yeah, we've seen him. He's a guy that he says that because of that, he doesn't shine against prospects. He's a workmanlike guy. But he believes that as his competition goes up, then we'll really start to see the whole package kind of come into effect. He thinks he's going to be competitive in this fight. Maybe not. He's not picking him to win it. But, Lara is not, as Edwards pointed out, a dominant champion or a dominant fighter. And that he kind of hunts and pecks, but he can be had, as Angulo's shown, other guys have shown. You can get to him and you can throw, have more offense in him in a round and pick some innings up. So I look for Gaucher to show a little more than he has, not just based on that, but I remember watching him in the WSB and I thought he'd be a better pro than he's been, but he is undefeated. It hasn't been exactly lighting the world on fire, but looking at the other two matchups, this is unbelievable card. It's got more straps than Floyd Mayweather leisure wear. It was a way homer. I like this Charlo Lubin fight, man. I think it's going to end in knockout. I'm leaning towards Jermell Charlo. I think he's just got a tighter base in terms of technique. He's growing into his man strength. I think he's going to be the stronger guy in there. And Lubin has a tendency to stand up a little bit too straight, a little stiff in the upper body, and he catches a little bit. And I'm not sure about that chin. He was down early as a prospect. He did get up to win, but against Charlo, he may not have that chance. And if he gets up, he may not be able to get him. So I think this one goes 8. I like Charlo to knock him out.
Gabe, I remember when Lubin was signed to, remember this, Mike Tyson Promotions about three, 4 years ago, and you wrote a story about it. And Erickson Lubin was the golden child of USA Boxing going into those Olympic Games for that cycle. And he turned pro very, very early. In fact, you referenced that fight where he hit the deck in Pittsburgh. That was back in 2014. Now, I was on the broadcast fight crew for that particular event from the Console Energy Center, and it was Norberto Gonzalez. And I just remember thinking to myself, did he make the right choice? I'm sure he got a nice signing bonus. They lined his pockets. There was some financial support to it. But there are certain kids that probably need to stay amateur a bit longer than they do. But this not being 1976 and boxing no longer being one of the glamour sports of the Summer Olympics, I understand that dynamic has changed. But the question is that Erickson Lubin, who's still basically a very young man at age 22, 18-0, is he battle-tested? Does fighting Jorge Cota as your fight before a title shot prepare you for Charlo? Now, I'll say this about both Jermell and Jermall. There was that old boxing belief that once you win a title, you get 30 to 40% better psychologically, and from a confidence standpoint, you just start to really come apart at the seams and become more than you ever thought you are, and that you start to grow into the title. I get the sense both Charlos are an example of that. And is Charles Hadley very, very incomplete and shinny? Yes, but I love the form that Charlo showed in just dismantling him in six rounds. He took command of the ring and just absolutely dominated a guy that, like I said, was flawed. But when you get a flawed opponent, you just don't let him pass into the night. You go out there and you stomp him, which is exactly what he did. And I get the sense that Charlo is a fighter on the run, and I think this is a man against a young man. And I will take the man, Jermell Charlo. I agree with you. Now, this fight holds a lot of intrigue. The last time we saw Austin Trout, who challenges Jarrett Hurd, was May of 2016. Now, he was pretty competitive against the other Charlo over 12 rounds, but was outworked just by a tad. If Austin Trout still has his legs and can swim upstream and make Jarrett Hurd chase him and use his legs, I think it's a real fight. Now, I think with Jarrett Hurd, if you make him lead and you make him be the hunter and the gatherer instead of him working off his back foot and coming straight towards him where he's going to put you in the blender, it's a real fight. I think Austin Trout could be ahead after six rounds, much like Tony Harrison, but I get the sense that Hurd is real. I've been a fan of his. I think he catches the fish late. I think he either scores a late stoppage or he overtakes him on the scorecards in the championship rounds, Gabe.
To do a pre-Emmanuel Stewart, that's exactly how I see the fight going. I think that, you know, Hurd, this is his second fight of the year. And, you know, while Trout did do well against Jermall Charlo and going the distance, that was last May, 2016. Where is his other fights have been? The lack of activity, that was his only fight in 2016. He only fought twice in 2015. And he's not, you know, Trout has been fighting, you know, Louis Galarza, Joey Hernandez, and then he stepped up to Charlo and showed his quality. But that kind of inactivity at a guy, you know, for a guy his age, in his 30s, I just don't think that's going to bode well for him. He's more of a boxer. He's not a puncher. Only 17 knockouts against 30 wins, 3 losses. He's a guy that goes the distance, but he can be put down. And I like Hurd. I think the Harrison win was quality. He's stepped it up. The JoJo Dan win was quality. This is a guy that's just kind of slowly moving along, developing the way you'd want a prospect to. And 20 wins, 14 knockouts. I tend to think his power is real. I think he's just going to be the stronger guy, younger guy in there, a little bit quicker. And with a fight this year, I think he's going to be the sharper man in there. So I expect Hurd to run a little wild on Trout later on in the fight.
Yeah.
I think a knockdown, not a stoppage, but definitely a knockdown.
My boxing sources on the Beltway from where Jarrett Hurd resides and trains will tell you this guy's an absolute workhorse. He's got a great work ethic. He's a real character guy. And the thing that I like about him more than anything else is not actually the skills or technique. It's that natural-born ability to relax. There's a lot of fighters who are in great shape who can't relax. They're very tense, and they don't breathe in the ring properly. Jared Hurd is just the opposite. And I thought that was the case against Tony Harrison. Yes, Tony Harrison outworked him early, outmaneuvered him, was maybe outboxing him in spots, but you could tell this was a lot like the tortoise and the hare. One guy built the lead, that being Harrison, but Harrison had to expend a lot more energy. Hurd, as I like to say, is a fuel-efficient fighter. So there it is, this Saturday, triple header on Showtime. Should be a very, very eventful night. And going back to Gaucher, you know what? Obviously, I respect the knowledge and the perspective of Breadman. I think it comes down to this for Terrell Gaucher. Is he willing to be as persistent as Alfredo Angulo? As I like to say, some fighters are tough, but not necessarily talented, so they make it up with temperament. The temperament of Terrell Gaucher is going to be absolutely key. If he just lets it go and empties the bucket and says, you know what, I have 36 minutes to change my life, and I'm going to go absolutely dog and just be a rabid pit bull in that ring against Lara, and don't worry so much about technique or being finesseful or looking good, but I'm willing to just chip away, and turn this into a fight. Yeah, he does have the physical capabilities, in my view, of really troubling Arizlande Lara, because let's face it, from a technical and fundamental standpoint, Gabe, he is superior to Alfredo Angulo.
Yeah, there's no question. And he's got size. I mean, he's 5'10". He's a little bit taller, 72-inch reach. Lara's got the long reach, and you know he's going to box. But, you look back, there was a fight earlier in his career, Carlos Molina. It was a draw. And a lot of people think that Molina, myself included, won that fight. And it was a mauling affair, same kind of fight as Angulo. Get him to the ropes, get him in the corners, and rough him up. And Lara has a tendency to kind of stand up a little bit straight and get caught with shots. You can get to his body. But if you keep it in the middle of the ring and let him dart in and out and just box with you, and you're staring at him and you're going for style points. This goes for Jared Hurd too. Like you said, he's very relaxed. His problem now, or his next step is learning when to step on the gas. I mean, when you're fighting Tony Harrison, that's one thing. You've seen that fight before, so you know, he's just expending energy and he hasn't learned anything. I'll get him later. But, this is a different kind of fight. This is a guy that knows how to go the distance. He's got a lot of experience against world-class dudes. Both of these guys need to fight with some urgency. Be the younger guy.
Moving on here, before the Showtime broadcast begins on Fox from the StubHub Center in Carson, California, it is a show that should be sponsored by a Conalube, because these are tune-ups. In the featherweight class, couple of belt holders, Leo Santa Cruz takes on Chris Avalos, and Amir Mahdev takes on Andres Gutierrez. Gabe, I don't know what to really say other than the fact I'm going to DVR this. I'll be in South Florida / Miami this weekend watching the Miami Hurricanes take on Georgia Tech. And honestly, even if I was home, I'm not so sure I'd watch this live. This is one of those shows that you're glad to have recorded so you can cut through all the commercials and the fluff so you get through it as fast as possible. I know I've said this before, but I'm going to reiterate it on this program. Santa Cruz Mahdev 1 was a nice fight. It wasn't Barrera Morales, regardless of what the PBC pom-pom waivers will try to tell you. It wouldn't be the worst rematch in the world, but Gabe, did it really warrant a prelude / tuna fight for both coming into it?
Yeah, I mean, is this Christmas money? What is this?
That's a good way of putting it, actually.
this is one of a weekend that I'm actually going to be solo, wife's out of town. So I'll be watching this, and I'm like, you guys couldn't fight each other, really? Like the one weekend I've got just like a long marathon of fights, put up the feet, grab that new bottle of Maker's 46 that I got, and enjoy the fights. And they're fighting tune-ups? I don't get it. Like you said, it wasn't like the first fight was so savage that they needed a break. It's been a while. They're both getting soft touches for no good reason other than, I guess if you fought often, if you fought a fight like this, no big deal. But, I'm not excited about it. But it'll be placeholders. Just don't go the distance. Don't do this to me and then stink it up too. At least live up to the step up and be a savage.
Yeah, and let's be fair about this. Admiral Mars was all aboard with the rematch taking place right then
no doubt.
And
He's
now. It is Leo Santa Cruz's father who basically said, we need a tune-up. Now, this is a fact. Admiral Mars fought December 10th. He fought Cuellar at the Galen Center of USC. Leo Santa Cruz fought January 29th, where he beat Carl Frampton at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. So my question is, if they would have offered this fight in May or June, would Leo's father have said, oh, no, it's too short of a time after coming off of the Frampton fight? I mean, they basically created their own catch-22 situation. I got to be honest with you. Living out here in L.A., Gabe, there's not a lot of buzz for this doubleheader, and the StubHub Center is one of those destinations that no matter what the fight, you kind of look forward to it. I don't feel any type of interest locally for this card.
Well, here's the thing. You don't really have knockout punchers, in either card. I mean, you might get a stoppage because, you know, the quality. Avalos has been knocked out a bunch of times. We should be talking about why he's still fighting. He looks young and everything, but, you know, you get stopped enough times. I don't care if you're competitive every other time. That's just not good for you. But you know, it's not like we're seeing two knockout punchers that'll eventually collide, you know? So, yeah, I wouldn't be excited about this card if I was living down there. If I was living down there and covering boxing, you know, I'd be mad. You know, I'd be thinking about, you know, being at Barclays if I was a beat writer. But yeah, this fight, no.
Gabe, speaking of not being excited, we all know that the retirement of Miguel Cotto is scheduled for December 2nd on HBO from the famed Madison Square Garden. And I don't know if you saw the Twitter back and forth I got into with my good friend Mikey Garcia, but I wrote this last week. If Mikey Garcia was going to get a Miguel Cotto fight or Jorge Linares and some other fights with the Golden Boy roster or even Top Rank, because he certainly called out a lot of those guys, he was going to have to sign a multi-fight contract. Now, I'm not saying that he should or shouldn't have. It's not my business. I see both sides of the issue. But I live in the real world, and Mikey Garcia decided that he wanted to do a one-off. And with that, none of the other available opponents that maybe we'd have interest in from 147 to 154, most of whom are tied up on the other side of the street and on Showtime this weekend, simply were not available. So we are stuck with Saddam Ali. You know, it's a great gold watch for Miguel Cotto. I don't think it's a great gold watch for us or anybody else, Gabe.
Yeah. Instead of HBO's The Deuce, we just have a deuce.
no shit.
Yeah, it's, you know, I like that show, by the way.
Me too. Good show.
Yeah, I haven't, no spoilers. I didn't see yesterday. I was drinking with Marines this weekend, and then Radio Raheem came through. So it's been a little bit busy weekend. But, yeah, you know, I saw this fight and announced. I'm like, how do you spend this money? I mean, do you just have some extra money? Or is it just – why do you want this fight if you're Miguel Cotto? I mean, you just wanted to go out with even more booze at the end and just more derision? What a weird career and what a weird choice.
You know, there's a couple things here. Miguel Cotto is certainly a flagship fighter on the East Coast. To me, I give him credit. Alongside Trinidad, he reestablished the Madison Square Garden as one of the boxing meccas, as it once was. However, this is a very, very busy schedule for boxing in New York City starting this weekend. I mean, there's an inordinate amount of shows. So everyone's budget or discretionary income is going to be really stretched, and people are going to make hard-line decisions here. And for all the respect that a lot of fans, I'm sure, have for Miguel Cotto, they still want to see some athletic competition. We just don't want to see a coronation or a gold watch retirement party. Saddam Ali is not a bad fighter, but this is a fact. He's a welterweight who's been knocked out by Jesse Vargas and is chinny in general. And all I can say to Golden Boy, I think some circumstances worked against you, but good luck with that, because there's a lot of derision and a lot of criticism over the fight, which I don't disagree with, but I do think there are some circumstances that we have to point out to be fair. And my question is with Mikey Garcia. No, and he accused me of saying, why did you say I'm just all talk? Now, Gabe, I don't know, agree or disagree with me. Please give me your answer. But if Mikey Garcia knows And this has been a process that's been ongoing between Golden Boy and Mikey Garcia since at least April, from what I understand. Golden Boy had made it very clear, we're not doing one-offs. Now, if you want to sign a reasonable multi-fight pact, you will get Linares, Lucas Matisse, and then Miguel Cotto later on came into the fold. Mikey's made it very clear, I'm Sinatra. I'm going to do it my way. I want to do one-offs, as if he's Sugar Ray Leonard in the 1970s and 80s, which he's not. So then a couple of weeks ago, he says, well, I want Miguel Cotto. I'll go up to 54. My opinion is this. Mikey Garcia is free to make whatever decisions he makes. I don't agree or disagree because I see both sides of the story, and I see both sides of the spectrum. However, Gabe, if you continually call out fighters from companies that you know have made it very clear from the onset, we're not doing one-offs, I do think that is a bit of grandstanding.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. What can you say? I mean, Golden Boy, it's just a weird thing. It's like he's trying to craft a superstar career after leaving a promoter that was moving him down that road and has a history of doing that. Everybody wants to be Oscar, but nobody wants to be with Bob. I don't understand it. And then you go to Golden Boy, who just got burned, in a sense, by Al Haymon, and you're being obviously maybe advised by him, and now you're, you know, trying to do a one-off. Like, dude, we already raised a bunch of guys on our card for and got nothing out of it. If you heard of Deontay Wilder or Danny Jacobs, we're not doing that again. He's kind of overvaluing himself.
It's like my understanding,
Cotto. Like, you're not that interesting. We don't want to just watch you move around the ring. Pick a better opponent.
During my back and forth with Mikey, which was relatively cordial, I said, Mikey, I'm not castigating your decision. That's your life, your pocketbook, your career. But I did ask him, so what's next? Are you going December 16th and against whom? And all he replied is, I have options. So, okay. So, but again, with Miguel Cotto and HBO, I this is a network putting fighter over fight first. And it is their subscribers that are going to suffer here. And again, I get it. There are circumstances. There are things that happened. And I guess they have a commitment to Miguel Cotto for whatever reason. I just
Does
find
he have
it strange.
Danger threshold? Is it like a.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That what?
I mean, listen. If Miguel Cotto and Freddie Roach were saying, you know what, we'll take on Gennady Golovkin if he beats Canelo, okay, that fight would have been at 160. Why wouldn't they fight David Lemieux then? I understand the risk versus reward, but I think it's going to be somewhat embarrassing when you're playing in front of 12,000 empty seats at the Garden for what is supposed to be your retirement fight.
Against a guy that's Amir, I just don't understand. Saddam Ali, a guy that Jesse Vargas stopped. Like, you're not even fighting Jesse Vargas, you know? I don't understand. There's got to be a graph. So, danger threshold versus a guy from 147 to 154, or a guy at 160 willing to come down. Like, what's his weight ceiling? What's his danger ceiling? And what's the best fight that you could make for Miguel Cotto? I'm curious from just like callers, you know, calling in. What fight would you make for Miguel Cotto that would be like, all right, it's my last fight. It's going to be a good one for the fans, and make everybody some money, and you actually want to see it. Because this thing is like a cold turd in like, you know, the early morning as you're running down the street. You didn't ask for this. You don't want it. It's a terrible.
According to Eric Gomez, he stated to me via text over the weekend regarding Cotto's dance partners. Others that declined or were unavailable included Mikey Garcia, Danny Garcia, Lamont Peterson, James Kirkland, Errol Spence, Lucas Matisse. So there you have it. Speaking of B.J. Saunders and David Lemieux, the WBO has ordered that Saunders, who is the belt holder, take on David Lemieux next, and Eric Gomez says he will explore that possibility of making that fight happen in December on HBO. So cross your fingers. I actually think that's a pretty good matchup. And once again, hashtag belts matter. And to wrap it up here, before we get to the Twitter timeline, Gabe, last week we had Victor Conte talking about the Louis Ortiz situation. He was scheduled to fight Deontay Wilder. The WBC ordered last Wednesday afternoon that they had stripped Ortiz basically of this spot. And so Bermain Stiverne will get the rematch on November 4th at the Barclay Center. You know, again, I think there was a gray area. I do understand the ruling by the WBC. Now, there's a part of me that does feel bad for Louis Ortiz, but two things I want to say about that camp. Number one, negligence cannot just be a blanket defense. Fill out your forms correctly, especially with the track record he had, whether it was fair or not. Second thing is, Gabe, for them to really be exonerated, and I don't know if this has actually happened despite their promises to Victor Ortiz, they better get that hair follicle test done and prove their innocence. Because if they don't, then guess what? I'm really back to being suspicious of them.
Yeah. Last I heard, and this was but several days ago, and you and I were tracking this pretty much at the same time. I heard that it was happening, and then I didn't hear anything back. So we don't know if the hair test is happening. And that, to me, he's got to do it. The show, hey, you know, I was clean during this period. That's the only thing that's in my system. You can look at the medicals because, you know, as Conte pointed out, you know, when you look at his chart, there's no evidence, there's nothing showing that he's doing something or suppressing something. So, although it should be noted, Hauser printed this. You and I had heard about it. This doctor, Dr. Richard Allen Hill, worst doctor ever. I don't know what their insurance is like. You know, I don't know if they have Obamacare or what, but Ortiz needs to get a better doctor than a guy with that track record. Sweet Buddha, that guy is scary.
Going to the Twitter timeline, of course, we start with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, who says, Mikey Garcia's free agent approach seems like it can only really work for guys like Canelo or Floyd. Will he eventually pick a promoter, in your opinion? Okay, strictly my opinion. Gabe, I think as long as he's with the PBC / Heyman in some form, I think it'll be business as usual for him. But I do find it interesting. Even Floyd basically used Golden Boy as his de facto promoter, even after leaving Top Rank. And Canelo's promoter? Golden Boy. It's not such a bad thing to have a promoter, last I checked.
You know, it usually works out. I mean, there have been some guys that go promoterless. Sugar Ray Leonard was a manager, right? And worked with several different promoters.
Yes, it was his advisor by the name of Mike Trainer. But again, this is all about market value and leverage. We are not talking about Sugar Ray Mikey here. Let's face it.
You look at the list of guys who turned down Cotto. One, you know, if I'm an active champion or have been, I'm embarrassed to be, you know, and I love the fighter. I loved him in his prime. But I'd be embarrassed to be on the same list as James Kirkland because it's like, well, are you fat? Like, why are you not ready to fight? I know James is kind of up and down and has probably, you know, put on some weight. But, you know, you're Danny freaking Garcia. You know, why couldn't, you know what? I'd love to see Errol Spence Miguel Cotto at some sort of agreed upon weight. Something that's interesting. What's going on with those guys?
You know, in defense of Spence and Lamont Peterson, I'm hearing a lot of rumblings that they could be headed to a matchup against one another December 16th in Long Island at the Nassau Veterans Coliseum. And I like that fight. You know me, I've always been a Peterson guy, and I think Spence can be special. That's a pretty good fight, actually. Here's a tweet from Tommy G. Question, do you like the Saunders-Lemieux fight? Gabe, I'm a yay on that one.
Yeah. The press conference is going to be awesome. I think it's good for Lemieux to really legitimize himself if he can take on a tough style like that, make it an exciting fight, and get Saunders out of there, or at least put him down. I think it's a great fight, and not a lot of danger of I think, for Lemieux getting knocked out in return. I mean, he may get caught with something he doesn't see, but I love the fight. I think it's the kind of fight that Saunders needs. He needs a style, a guy that's relentless and believes in his power to bring out the best of him. Otherwise, it's horrible.
Here's a question from Harry Levy. Jermell Charlo is enrolled with VADA for his fight with Lubin. Is this the first time he has had a fight with VADA testing? You know, I don't know, Gabe. Maybe you do. But here's my question. Just because he's enrolled with VADA in the clean testing program, do we know he was actually tested? That's what I want to know.
No, the numbers on that are like, I think it was like 225 fighters are enrolled, and like a very small percentage of them have gotten tested so far. Maybe 20% of them, somewhere between that, around there is what I heard. I could be wrong, but I trust the source. So
yeah.
I've heard this for a while that there's a difference, and not just heard it, but confirmed it, that if you're in the program, you're just in the testing pool, and at any time you could be 24/7 in all the places that you filled out on your whereabouts form, you could be tested, but that doesn't mean that you are. And if you have a fight, even if the other guy's in the clean boxing program, it doesn't mean that you have one of the original training camp programs where you're getting tested 8 to 12 times. So yeah, he's in the program, but I don't know if Vada's doing this fight.
Here's a question from Talking Sports, or a statement. I'm happy Lara is taking on top-quality opposition against Saturday. Fun matchups. Will he close his career strong or step back down in competition? Now, my understanding is, Gabe, that the WBA has said that he has to fight Demetrius Andrade should they both win their upcoming fights. But, Gabe, I think that's a good matchup. But we don't know if Andrade, number one, he's on the other side of the street now at HBO, and he might be a middleweight. So I will say this, though. Talking to Steven Espinoza, the head of Showtime Sports, I believe that network is going to try to consolidate that division. So I guess the question then becomes, if Lara stays at 54, I think he will get an opportunity to unify the division. So do I ever think he's going to get Canelo again or Golovkin? Probably not. But you know what? Again, like with Terrence Crawford, it's pretty damn historic if you have a chance to really consolidate a division.
Always. It's exciting. You know, that's what we talk about with storylines, you know. It would be a great turnaround for him if he was able to take on – I mean, he's got a legit dangerous opponent there in the winner of Lubin Charlo. For him to unify that, and Jarrett Hurd. Miguel Cotto is lucky. I think he picked wisely, picking Saddam Ali and getting the hell out of there. There's a lot of great fights, but you know, yeah, Andrade, I think he's going to be a 60, and he's going to be in that mix over there. Lemieux, Jacobs, Triple G, Canelo. I think, you know, and where's Derevyanchenko Yanchenko?
He is a IBF mandatory or number one, and you're right. If you have a choice to being at 54 or 60. Both divisions have good fighters, but as they say about robbing a bank, why do you rob banks? Well, that's where the money's at. The money's at 160. Here's a question from Fernando Barbosa. Where will you be at, Burchelt Salido or at Loma Rigondo? Now, both, my understanding is Burchelt Salido could be happening December 9th at the StubHub Center. And Loma Rigondo is one of those fights, I'll watch it. It's just not my cup of tea. It might be yours, Gabe. I know you like that fight more than I do. But if Burchelt Salido is at StubHub Center, I'll be dusting off my parka and my long johns, and I will be in Carson, California. Let me see if we have
That's
any other.
Fight.
Yeah, let me.
Looking at both those, like just Loma Rigo, I kind of feel about it the way I felt about Kirkland Canelo. Yeah, I always wanted to see the fight, but it's just like well past the due date and at a weight that. Is, you know, the situation is not to Rigo's advantage. I think he's going to get stopped. But the other fight, that's a savage fight. Is that for sure, or is that just tentative?
I believe it is. Let's put it this way. In football parlance, I think we're in the red zone. We may not be
nice.
At the goal line or inside the five. We're in the red zone. Let's just put it that way. And something could be announced later this week. Again, if you want to call in, we'll go to the phone lines now, 347-215-7598, and we'll continue to hit Twitter. So please send in your questions, comments, or critiques at Steve UCN Live and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, let's go to the phone lines.
Let's start with 503. You're live on the next round. 503.
Hey guys, it's Tyler.
What's up, man?
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing with the Miguel Cotto and Saddam Ali news of that fight getting made. I know you guys mentioned Errol Spence and Lamont Peterson, but I didn't think those names were ever realistic. Even a guy like David Lemieux, I didn't think that was going to be realistic. I kind of don't understand about the Mikey Garcia one, kind of why he would have to since Cotto's on his way out, sign a multi-fight deal if he's on his way out. I got to understand if he wanted to fight Matisse or Linares, because those are kind of two of their kind of bigger names, but I kind of don't understand why he would have to sign a multi-fight deal since this is going to be Cotto's last fight.
That's the way the business is, and I could look at it both ways, but this is consistent across the board. Nobody in Golden Boy's position, whether it be top rank, main events, K2, I think would do a one-off in this position. We can argue all day, should it be allowed, should it happen, I guess, but at the end of the day, Golden Boy is not doing a one-off. Simple as that.
I think, and HBO, I wonder, what their position on Mikey Garcia is. They had a relationship. He walked away from Top Rank, walked away from them. So why are they going to do anything that's just going to benefit him for one shot? They're basically rewarding that behavior. I don't think it works like that.
And by the way, if you sign a fight with Cotto with 3-fight options, that's 4 fights, right? That could literally be 16 months. And that's guaranteed fights with, I assume, guaranteed money with marquee opponents.
I mean, I guess the idea is that, if you go fight by fight on your time, you get to just make a decision every time all the landscape changes. And if somebody's fortune starts to rise, then you can swoop on that in a moment's notice and not be beholden to a promoter who's like, no, we'll get that guy later. I could see the advantage of it, but there's also the possibility of sitting around forever and not having any momentum at all.
Yeah, but you know what? You could do that if you're Canelo. He ain't Canelo. And another thing is, look, the biggest international star, in my view, alongside Canelo, is Anthony Joshua, right? Guess what? He has a promoter, too.
You know, it's kind of weird to me is that the way I feel about Mikey Garcia, though, as a fighter, I kind of believe in him more than I believe in Canelo. I would match him kind of tough. I think I might pick him against Terrence Crawford. I think he's a tougher and better than people realize. In that sense, it's frustrating that he's not fighting more often.
I just kind of figured that Mikey Garcia would be able to help sell a little bit more tickets than someone like Saddam Ali. But looking more into the future, I had a real quick question: is the Danny Jacobs and Luis Arias fight, is that at 160?
I believe so. Yes, November 11th in Long Island. I think that absolutely is a full fledged 160-pound fight.
Danny Jacobs has been at middleweight for 12 years now, and he's been having long layoffs. I can't imagine he's going to be at 160 too much longer. And I think I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb there, but I think he's going to have a lot of trouble making weight, or might not even make weight.
I think people, if you believe that he was 176 to maybe 179 the night of the fight, which I do, I think, you're probably right. He's 30. It's going to start to happen. I thought he should be a 68 for a while, and he was kind of fighting at prospect weight there for a long time.
But Gabe, remember, 160 is the bank. That's where the money is.
The bank. No, he's going to make it. He's just going to have those skinny legs for a while. But
he's
going to
be like,
hey,
Andre, hey, Rozier, I don't need my left toe. Cut it off. We're making 160.
They're not coming out to snack, I don't think, for this time, because I think the camp's going to be quick. But probably the next time, and we'll see. But, I would say maybe 3 fights. You can cash the bank pretty quick here in the 160 division, depending on how Canelo Triple G redo goes.
Mm.
All right, thanks,
Tyler,
guys.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks, guys.
All right, Tyler, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Later on, we'll have fight review and fight preview and some more news and notes. A lot to talk about here on the next round, Gabe.
Do you think either of those guys takes a Danny Jacobs fight if they win, or is it just too far ahead?
Which two guys?
So they, if Canelo and Triple G rematch with each other, do you think either of them would take a Danny Jacobs fight next?
You know what? Here's the issue. There is some mandatory defenses to get out of the way, like Jermall Charlo, Derevchenko. I mean, they're not going to just stand around and wait forever. I mean, they want their rights enforced, which is certainly very, very reasonable. I mean, look, the WBC last week at their convention in Azerbaijan, it made some people laugh, and I understand why, because Canelo wants nothing to do with them. But they said, we are ordering an immediate rematch. And everyone said, well, Canelo doesn't care. But Suleiman didn't do this to please or to placate Canelo. This is their way of telling Charlo, we still like Golovkin, and you're going to have to wait your turn. That's what that move was all about.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting, seeing Charlo press his number one for the WBC. It's funny, when I think of Azerbaijan, I always think of that Fixing the Olympics boxing scandal piece in the New Yorker. But I digress. Shall we hit the phone lines?
Yes.
All right. 405, you're live on the next round.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. What's going on?
Not much. Does anybody know what Danny Garcia is doing for him to be turning down fights against Miguel Cotto? Is it a possible fight with Miguel Cotto? He hasn't fought since March.
I agree, and there's nothing on the table. I know a lot of PBC Heyman guys are being rumored for that December 16th date. I haven't heard Danny Garcia's name in any fights. Have you, Gabe?
Angel Garcia must be screaming about foreign fighters coming over here and taking TV dates right now. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, where is he? I have no idea.
Yeah, but
you know, I don't have. You know, I just have Angel's number somewhere, but you know, we don't speak.
Lucky
yeah,
you.
I mean, Thurman is still coming back from that injury, right? So, right now, just everything's on hold, and Sean Porter's not fighting Danny Garcia. I don't understand what's going on with the PBC.
Yeah, but David Lemieux and Billy Joe Saunders, that's a pretty good fight right there. I'd probably pick Lemieux in that one, but that's a good one I'd like to see.
I don't know. You know what? I think Billy Joe might outbox him. I know people are going to cringe at that thought, and so am I, but just looking at that stylistically, I don't think that's an easy matchup for David Lemieux at all.
No, it's not. Another thing, talking about Stavern and Wilder. Didn't Stavern take step-aside money to let the Wilder and Ortiz fight happen?
Right, but that was contingent on that fight actually going through. Now, again, I'm not their accountant. I don't know if he has to give that money back or they kick it off the purse. You know, my hope is that Bermain Stavern is in much better shape than he was for that first encounter.
Yeah, and when anyway, I think
hopefully
Steve,
he's not sitting in the sauna. Sweating
oh, jeez.
I mean, when you're a heavyweight and you're in the sauna sweating off weight just to look good, I don't understand the whole purpose of that. I hope he's been training. And, you know, stylistically, and just in terms of experience and who Stavern was when they fought, I kind of like the rematch and a chance for this guy to get some redemption.
Really?
I think I do.
Gabe,
I know.
You are a one of a kind. I'm not lying to you. I'm not exaggerating. You're literally the one person. But you know what? I kind of like this. You know what? I like Glitter, too. I like Gigli the sequel. Damn, Gabe.
Yeah. I
really?
I cried when G-Baby died and the Keanu Reeves' hardball. Spoiler alert, but, you know, it's been years. You should have seen it. I think only in that sense. I mean, Stavern, if he's been in shape at all or has been trying to stay sharp, if he's upset about losing the first fight, I mean, how much can you really believe in Wilder?
And by the way, guys,
best fight.
From the Twitter timeline hotline, someone pointed out to me on Twitter, isn't Danny Garcia rumored to cherry pick Brandon Rios? Yes. Yes, he is.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus. Well,
yeah.
And Sean Porter's fighting Adrian Granados. Adrian, why do they keep matching me so hard, Granados?
All right, listen.
One more thing,
Thank you for the call. Yes.
Should us Cowboys fans go ahead and change our last name to Rogers, since he seems to be our fucking daddy?
Yeah, you might want to do that. Boy, Aaron Rodgers, that guy is an absolute wizard. An absolute wizard. Anyway, thank you for the call. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Jake, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
Jake?
What's going on?
Good. What's up,
man?
Hey, I was just wondering, do you think there's any possibility of that Lemieux-Saunders fight going to purse bid and somehow it ending up in America or Canada?
You know, I think there's a possibility of anything, but generally, Eric Gomez and Frank Warren, they have a pretty good relationship. They have cut other deals. I would say the odds are against that fight going to purse bid. I spoke to Eric a little earlier, and I did get some stuff up from him on Boxing Scene. And they're going to try to work out a deal, and I think Eric's preference is to make the deal sweet enough that Billy Joe Saunders, if he can, I don't know what his legal status is, will break out his passport.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that Lemieux, one of the things you really need is a good hook with a southpaw and nice compact getting close on him. I think Lemieux's got good enough bounce in his legs, real power in both hands, but he's got a nice tight hook, and I think that's going to serve him really well against Saunders. I think it's a tough fight for him, but I think it's very winnable. It's a good matchup. Anything that makes a Saunders fight kind of exciting, it's going to be good.
Steve, did you happen to – I don't know if you saw this, but did you happen to catch the very strange tearing down of Eddie Hearn by Lou DiBella?
I read the headline. I don't know what – listen, Lou has competition out there in the New York area, and he's trying to protect his space. I don't know what to really say other than that.
Okay, I just wanted to know what exactly that could have been about, because it seemed just completely out of left field. I didn't take Hearn to be targeting a specific region when he came over, but I don't know. Maybe he is.
Well, listen, Eddie and Lou have a history. They battled on Twitter over the summer. There's no love lost between them. Let's just put it like that. I don't think they'll be breaking bread anytime soon.
Anything else, Jake?
All right, thanks, Jack.
No, all right, Jake, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I think the edibles have kicked in for Jake. 917, you're live on the next round. 917?
Gabe, Steve, it's Amilcar. How's it going?
Amilcar,
hey,
welcome aboard.
Yeah, man, I think you guys are being a little too harsh on Cotto. You know, apparently Kermit Cintron and Lovemore and Dew were not available. I didn't hear you mention them on your list. Yeah,
I'd watch that fight.
In all seriousness, as someone who lives like in New York City, I mean, I'm not at all interested in that fight. And to be honest, even though it's in the big room, I think in terms of legitimate ticket sales, that the Regan-Lomachenko fight will probably outsell it.
No, that's already sold out, by the way. Jim Boone said that is a very tough ticket. And if you haven't gotten your ticket by now, chances are you're going to have to go on the secondary market and pay more than face value. Amilcar, you are someone in that region. Out of all those shows from October 14th to possibly December 16th, which is more or less Long Island, I don't know if that really counts, which shows are you going to in that local area?
Long Island is actually not too inaccessible because you can get there on the Long Island Railroad, which is like a train that goes to the suburbs of Long Island. Having said that, I don't think I'll go out there. really the only ticket I have at this moment is the Regan-Lomachenko fight. I would check out the fight at the Barclays, the Lara Gausha fight. The only thing, though, is that I just don't know if it's worth $57. You know what I mean?
That sounds $57. Isn't that fairly reasonable? Or you don't like the vantage point that you're getting for that amount?
It's reasonable, but I mean, it depends. Like, if you're going with a friend, fair enough, they take the ticket. If you're going with a girl, you got to buy the ticket for her, and then you got to think about the other expenses associated of going to the actual arena. The thing is with me is that maybe I'm spoiled, but I paid face value ticket for the best fight I've seen so far at the Barclays, and that was the that was the fight with
the Gale against Badu Jack.
Yes, I mentioned it a few times. The Gale against Badu Jack, and that was priced at roughly, I think it was $30 plus tax. I mean, that was very cheap. But guess
what?
They
had, really? Okay.
And everything since then has been three or four times that amount. I don't think $57 is unreasonable. It's just that if you're thinking about going to a number of fights, I mean, I'm not a millionaire. I'm a public school teacher. I've got to, like, budget things. And I don't know. I'll consider it. The other thing is that with those fights, you know, they're really never at risk of going out of sales. So I always have until, like, the last minute to find tickets with the Barclays shows.
Yeah, there's certainly a track record there. I spoke to Jim Boone earlier today as I got a couple of comments from him for a story I'm doing later this week on that very, very busy boxing schedule coming up in Gotham City. And he says outside of December 9th with Rigondeaux and Lomachenko, he said everything else he'd wait literally to the day or two before the event to purchase tickets.
Yeah, pretty much that's always what I've done. I wanted to quickly comment on the Garcia thing and him not wanting to sign with the promoter. You know, I kind of see where he's coming from. I mean, if you want to go it your way and you don't really need boxing financially, I think he's got degrees. He's probably got another career path he can go down. I mean, if he wants to make a stand and kind of be a pioneer, I mean, there was a time when in the quote-unquote major league sports, there wasn't a free agency, you know. I remember when Oscar started Golden Boy, one of the things I always remember him saying was that other promoters are like the bosses of the fighters, like the fighters are essentially employees, but that with Golden Boy would be the employee and the fighter would be like the employer. I mean, if boxing is what you've described as, Gabe, on a few occasions, a series of individual business transactions, why shouldn't a fighter just sign one-off contracts and hire the promoters like a contractor to do his damn job, which is to promote the fight? I mean, I'm not saying the business of boxing works that way, but if he's not concerned about losing money and wants to take that stand, I'm not going to knock it.
Oh, I'm not going to knock it either. But then from Golden Boy's perspective, they're saying, we're not going to do the deal. I mean, they both have to live with their decisions, you know?
Yeah.
I think it just comes down to, because, you know, actors and boxers are kind of similar in that way. You don't, some guys sign multi-year deals with the studio, which is really because the studio is also control the distribution. But now that that's changed, you do have guys kind of doing their own thing, you know, but I wouldn't call Mikey Garcia Tom Cruise, you know, he hasn't really quite, or even Floyd Mayweather or even Triple G. I mean, look at, he's one of the most popular fighters in the world. Not exactly a pay-per-view guy. You know, maybe we'll see now that he's been with Canelo, how that transfers after, but you know, it's a changing business, and I don't know, I can see both sides. I can understand what you're saying, but it's all about leverage in the marketplace, and I don't know what Mikey's got.
Unfortunately for him, I don't really think he has much. I think you said it best, Steve. It's like he would take maybe Anthony Joshua or someone like that when he's out of his contract to do that. But I mean, I think it's one of the reasons I like with Chris Eubank Jr. when he knocked out his Turkish opponent. I forgot the guy's name. But I'd like to see that a lot more in terms of, like, a more structured kind of few fans here in the United States that's following that tournament, but I do like the fact that it leads to, like, a champion, and, you know, there's a structure there to follow.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting watching. I was sitting with a boxing person yesterday and talking about Eddie Hearn and what he's done with boxing over in the UK, and saying that basically he thinks that Eddie's going to kind of turn us, you know, it's going to take over the sport in a sense.
Really?
Not so aggressively, but yeah, he has a lot of faith in the Eddie coming over here and being able to really succeed in where other people have failed. You know, I don't know if I should be broadcasting that to the world, but he just feels like this guy is really a solid promoter. And
no, listen, Gabe.
But look,
I have a lot of respect for Eddie Hearn. But last I checked in England, he doesn't have to compete with the NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, and college sports.
You say that, Steve. But I mean, nothing here in the United States. I used to live in England. Nothing here in the United States is comparable to the English Premier League. I mean, it's
right, and that's one entity.
Yeah.
That's one entity.
Really, I wasn't necessarily agreeing that Eddie would take over. I think he's going to do well, but I think Richard in creating this format and kind of I think he's looking at something that he can brand. You know, when he was out of boxing, there was that, you know, the bare knuckle boxing thing, the BKB, right? I'm pretty sure that was the same infrastructure. Some of the same employees were working there that were, like, working in that clearance house for the PBC. That was all kind of one thing. I'm pretty sure Richard was involved, even though his name wasn't on it. Other guys, like his lieutenant, Bruce Binko, was a part of that group. So I think Richard's been looking for a league-type format and kind of just trying stuff out. Boxing Super Series. I love that BS is in a title of something Richard Schaefer's a part of. I think that's a step towards that. And if you can get a TV deal somewhere, you're looking to brand more divisions with the BSS.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for the call, Milkar. Join us again next week. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
530. Live.
Good evening, Gabe, Steve, Ringside Robert here. I can see both sides of the Mikey Garcia issue, but I believe if he wants to get good fights, he's going to have to sign with a promoter. He's not, as you pointed out, Steve, he's not Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, he's not. If Canelo was a free agent, he's not a Canelo. He's not an Anthony Joshua. He's going to have to make a decision at some point. Because
it's not Andre Ward.
Yeah, exactly. And Andre Ward was successful in breaking numerous contracts, and I still don't know how he managed that. I guess a good legal team. But, you know, he's got the talent. It's obvious how good a fighter he is, but we've got to see him in against top people. And remember, he is a belt holder, and if he doesn't have decent title defenses, the BC will probably say, okay, Mikey, it's time to lose your title. You know, so he's got to make a decision at some point and do something. And, you know, the only thing I don't like about the boxing business now is I love the deal that Eddie Hearn's doing, but sticking Danny Jacobs on one network and saying, okay, if you're going to fight me, you're going to fight on HBO, or have Anthony Joshua, well, I've got to deal with Showtime. Look, if boxing promoters have to work together, boxing TV networks should have to work together, don't you think?
Well, you're talking to a guy that's written more articles about it than anybody, but I don't know what to say other than, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where Mikey's coming from, but, you know, I think it's going to hurt his career if it goes on too long. And he's... after each one of his fights on Showtime, he's openly said, anybody fights me, they have to fight there. If you're going to be a total free agent, then don't box yourself into one specific network.
You know, that's a great point. That is a very good point, Robbie.
Yeah.
He's trying to have it both ways. I mean, listen, when he basically said that, it's almost like a declaration, well, I'm with Heyman and PBC, which is fine. But then he can't say, well, you can only fight on Showtime if I want to be a free. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. No, and I'm surprised nobody has brought that up before now. But if you've noticed, since he's been on Showtime, after each fight, he's put out a list of names of people he wants to fight. And then he says at the end, oh, but you have to fight on Showtime. That's not how it works. If you're a total free agent and you do not have a promoter, then you should be a total free agent when it comes to TV deals.
I don't disagree.
Yep.
I don't know how he would disagree either, now that I think about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wasn't involved in your Twitter discussion this week, but the next time you talk to him, I'd point that out to him, Steve.
Yeah.
What he says. Yeah. But as far as the boxing calendar, I think it's great, although some of these fights, I mean, who wants to see Miguel Cotto? Who wants to see Santa Cruz and Morris have tune-ups? And we don't really need to see that rematch. We don't really need to see Bermain Stiverne and Wilder again. You know, I just wish there were new names in the mix. The card I'm looking forward to the most this weekend is the Showtime card. I think two out of the three fights are going to be very interesting. I think Laura's going to have a basic walkover. I don't think Gaethje is ready for prime time. I don't think he's had enough fights. I think Charlo will beat Lubin. I think it'll be competitive. And I hate to disagree with you, Steve, but I do believe Austin Trout is going to be once again a belt holder, and I think he's going to beat Jarrett Hurd.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, I want to see what is in the tank of Austin Trout. How much air is left in those tires? That is everything. Because that movement, if it is there, it will absolutely trouble Jarrett Hurd. Robbie, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, see you next week, guys.
We are done with our first hour on the next round. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get to the fight preview. The World Boxing Super Series resumed this past weekend in Germany. And I think there's a clear, I don't want to say clear, but I think Chris Eubank made a bit of a statement by just absolutely obliterating Avni Yildirim in three rounds. Now, I get it. This wasn't exactly Nigel Benn or James Toney or even Michael Nunn, but I got to tell you, I was impressed by Eubank.
Yeah, he looked like he wanted to put on a show. We talked about it on the show, I think on Leaving in the Ring as well. I kind of like him to have a bit of an Andre Ward moment in this tournament, and except exciting. And he really made a statement in this, went out there after it. Not much of a jab, kind of bothered me, but it was almost like he felt something from Avni. I keep screwing up his last name.
Yildirim.
You know, I think maybe he tasted his power. But, you know, also Yildirim was kind of coming to him naked as well without the jab and just a sitting duck in front of him. I think the moment got a hold of him and the speed of Eubank Jr. and the power, he just started digging in with uppercuts and left hooks. I just loved it. I'd been watching Aaron Pryor playing in the gym. They always play old fights like on a constant loop. And just the relentlessness, the aggression. I was like, where are the fighters of today? A dude that can just throw nonstop, round after round, and pound away at you. And here was Eubank Jr. doing exactly that. It's good stuff. It's really exciting.
Yeah, you know, did Yildirim hang a curveball? Yes, but even in baseball, if you get a hung curveball, still got to do something with it. I've seen a lot of guys swing through hanging curveballs or pop it up or dribble it back to the mound. Eubank hit it 475 feet right on the square like Aaron Judge. Got to give him credit for that. Gabe, another fight that took place in the U.K., Anthony Carolla defeated Ricky Burns over 12 rounds. Gabe, I thought this fight was pretty clear. I thought Carolla, from round one, just simply outworked Ricky Burns.
Yeah. You know, Burns just doesn't look like the same guy. You know, he's just wearing down. And he can move around, like, you know, extend the fight, but he's not going to win the fight. I didn't see this as that close. I mean, it was up tempo fight and everything, but it was clearly a Carolla win. I think it was the right kind of fight for him to get back, you know, get his winning legs underneath him again, and look around the division, see what he wants.
And also, L.A. Fight Club at the Belasco Theater in L.A. Edgar Valeria and Chimpa Gonzalez come up with victories. Going on to the fight preview, lots going on this weekend, actually. Friday night, Golden Boy on ESPN from Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California. Fidel Maldonado takes on Ismael Barroso. And Pablo Cesar Cano takes on Marcelino Lopez. And then the World Boxing Super Series from London, George Groves takes on Jamie Cox. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, I think Maldonado Barroso can be a fun little shootout.
I could have sworn I saw on Twitter that Maldonado was injured, and that might be out.
No, that was Magdaleno.
Oh, that was Magdaleno.
He dropped out of his fight against Cesar Juarez November 11th in Fresno. Listen, I'm not trying to be Oliver Stone, but I saw Magdaleno last week. All I can say is this. He looked awfully heavy. Awfully heavy. Yeah.
No, yeah, I think that's, well, maybe good for him then. You know, if you're not ready, then don't go. But why aren't you ready? Why are you fat? Maldonado Barroso, my bad. No, that's going to be an all-action fight. Maldonado, just it's like that guy that you like that's flawed, but at the same time, like, very exciting. That's, you know, why I enjoy watching him. So I kind of lean towards him in the fight, but I think, you know, anything could happen.
347-215-7598. We're here for at least another 25 minutes if you want to talk about the Showtime triple header or the show on Fox. Or give us your thoughts. What do you think of Cotto Saddam Ali and what is supposed to be the swan song of the pride of Puerto Rico, Gabe?
I'm surprised we're not getting more picks on, Charlo Lubin. I think it's a hot fight, man. 619, you're live on the next round. 619?
Hello, San Diego? San Diego?
Let's try one of these. The internet is acting a little kooky. That's never a good sign. Let's try 281. I think that's actually what's happening, is that there's some sort of lag in the...
We have a technical difficulty to deal with here on the next round.
Yeah. Well, you know, 647 episodes, it was bound to
happen. All right. I think 619 was one. He just messaged me saying, it was me, I was talking, but you guys didn't hear me. So should we go back to 619?
Yeah, the thing is... hang on one second. This is very strange. The it's just kind of doing the loading sign, you know. And I've got internet. It says I've got it, but then it's saying it's taking too long to respond. And this is like a built for streaming computer. Just now I'm not working it out of a laptop. I'll switch over to my other internet line and see if that works. This is modern radio right here, folks. I wonder if Juan can even hear us. I'm switching back. Sorry about this. It's kind of dead air, but it's saying I've got no internet.
All right, now Juan is saying that he can hear us, just so you know.
He can hear us.
Yes.
Well,
he didn't get the beep,
well,
though.
Let's see. I'm trying to pull somebody on.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Ooh, here I am. Yeah, I got the beep.
Sorry about that, folks.
The stage is yours.
Thanks. Yeah, I want to talk about a couple of things. I got a chance to watch the Triple G fight again. Not talking about the fight. We already talked about that. I just wanted to talk a little bit about commentary in general. I was at a party this weekend, and I had a conversation with a group of guys that a few weeks back before the fight were 100% pro Canelo. They were like, they thought there was no chance in hell Triple G was going to beat him. There were like these guys that don't know a lot about boxing, but just seen, you know, one of the fighters. And they were 100% convinced that he was going to destroy him. After the, you know, this weekend I saw them again, and they were like super disappointed in Canelo, and they were like, Triple G just beat him, and we're super disappointed. We didn't expect this. And I asked him, so how did you guys watch the fight? Did you watch the HBO broadcast or did you watch the Mexican broadcast? And they were like, no, we watched the HBO broadcast. All right, cool. And then there was this other group of guys that watched the Mexican broadcast, and I asked them, what do you think? And they were like, oh, no, Canelo deserved the draw or at least win. So I was like, okay. So commentary, like, these days, like, I was watching the fight, and the way Roy Jones, the way Kellerman just try to push a narrative – and push it. The same thing happens with TV Azteca and the Mexican television networks. And I think the same thing happens with Showtime. They try to put the public in a mindset that if you're not an experienced boxing fan or a hardcore fan, you can easily start looking at things that they want you to look. You're just looking at what they tell you to look, and you totally start neglecting or not watching what the other guy's doing. There was a round, I think it was the ninth round, I don't remember exactly, where Triple G comes in and in the beginning, in the first 10 seconds of the round, he connects like a three-punch combo, pretty crisp, pretty hard punches. Nobody said anything at all. And it went like nothing happened. And then the next punch that Canelo throws, he lands the punch, and they go, right hand by Canelo. And you immediately think Canelo's winning the round. And he's not. So my question to you guys is, what do you suggest for fans to do, or how to score, how to watch a fight, trying to ignore that? Because I think it's a big problem in how people perceive.
Yeah, I would say two things. There's always a mute button, but also trust your own eyes.
And same thing.
Yeah.
I think Amilcar was talking about how fighters are now attached to a network, and it's kind of the same thing. Once you get attached to a network, you're guaranteed to look different because they're going to be pushing for you to look good. You know what I mean? So all those things
are
kind
of like...
Yeah,
it is too bombastic. They talk way too much about stuff other than what's actually happening. You know? They'll have long conversations. Max does it. I also feel Mauro does it. And really just going nuts. I mean, Paulie gives his, like, technical expertise. Sometimes he'll see something that nobody else is seeing and kind of keep repeating it, which drives me crazy. You only need to say it a few times or if the person keeps doing it. But Mauro, and I feel to some extent Max, they're just pushing narratives really hard, trying to make something that it isn't and trying to come up with jokes, forcing them. It's just brutal to listen to. I kind of keep the volume a little bit lower than I used to, and usually I'm watching it. Sometimes I'm watching it after the fact, but I'm watching it with somebody else, so I'm probably having more of a conversation over theirs, you know? Just kind of learn to tune it out, because it is hard to listen to. Mauro really drives me nuts.
The other thing that I started watching the Linares fight, too, I hadn't watched that. I was, the gym, watching it on the app, and the same thing. In the first couple of rounds, Kellerman was, like, comparing him with Ray Robinson, with Ali, and you're like, dude, this kid is...
Yeah.
Nowhere near those guys. Come on, dude. It just, like, if you're not experienced, you haven't watched this sport for a long time, you're initially, like, the first thing you're thinking is this guy is a legend. This guy is a future Hall of Famer. This guy is a future great fighter. And it's not that. It's way too much. And that's why a lot of people are just think way too much of certain fighters and are totally confused in how to watch boxing. And finally, just one more thing before I end my call. I think Robbie was talking about how the problem right now, same thing with the networks. Dude, let's be real. I've been watching the sport for a little bit more than 30 years, and back in the 90s, it was the same problem, dude. Showtime, HBO, same thing. Fighters wouldn't fight each other. Promoters wouldn't do it. It's the same thing, dude. It's exactly the same thing. Nothing has changed that much, if you ask me. That's all.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, people talk about the good old days of boxing being on network TV. ABC, CBS, and NBC, they all had their exclusive output deals also.
Yep. Isn't that how Golden Boy started? Like, they had an exclusive output deal, like, I forget, we were, like, kind of ticking it off. It was, like, 36 shows or something. It was ridiculous. 281, you're live on this round.
Hey, guys.
Anyway, Juan, glad we got to you. Thank you for the call. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Nate, you're live on the next round.
All right. I'm here. How's it going?
Good. What's going on?
Saddam Ali, really?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about it to me, though, is all it says is that Cotto is so bent on, you know, so important for him to win his final fight that he's not going to put himself out there to anybody that's dangerous. You know. So, you know, I just...
I mean,
but I look at him like...
Really, for Christmas, you're getting that?
Yeah, and I just look at it and go, who wants to watch that? I mean, I already have HBO, and it's still going to be too expensive to watch.
Time cannot be wasted, you know.
So yeah, I don't know about that one, but you know, that's listening with Juan. I mean, it really is true, you know, about you know, whether it's HBO or Showtime or whoever, just you know, pushing their whatever narrative. And you know, one of the reasons when I got back from that Triple G Canelo fight that I wanted to see the replay was, one, I just wanted to see if I saw it the same that I did when I was there, and two, to kind of hear what these, you know, how they called it. And you know, you just saw some of that stuff, Max just going, you're just shaking your head, and Roy, I don't know, he was just all over the place in that fight. But yeah, I mean, they really do, you know, push their own narrative, and it can be easy to get lost in it.
You know, thought it was interesting today that HBO announced Jim Lampley has signed a 5-year extension. So I it's clear evidence, though, they're not getting out of the boxing business. I think the rumors of their demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, I would say that too. So a week ago, Gabe, you were kind of pretty much of the opinion that the Ortiz Wilder fight should still go on. Do you still feel the same way after it's kind of come through?
Yeah, I did want to see that fight, and I thought, other than like that final, and I think this was the straw that broke the camel's back, was that doctor, the guy that, you know, that was on the prescription. And apparently there was, you know, a history dating back to 2014 with the guy, and he'd legit been to the, you know, ICU, and, you know, been to a urgent care center. So the problem, all that was legit, but, you know, we'll find out about the hair test if they actually take it. But that doctor and his history, regardless of the fact that he has a license to practice, just didn't look good. I think the fact that he had the high blood pressure, even if he was getting medicine, it made it very convenient for everybody to back out of that fight and go with a guy that hasn't fought in 2 years. I'd rather see that fight. As much as I am curious about Bermain Stiverne, I'm also curious why he hasn't fought in the last 2 years and why you would still retain your number one contendership that way. What about you? Would you rather have seen it? Did that change anything for you?
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, after listening to Victor Conti for all of that, you know, it was really kind of going, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't really come back around to, okay, well, you know, that stuff can be used apparently as a masking agent. Okay, fine. And if he's had blood pressure issues for the last, what is it, 3 years or something, and he's been on the medication, well, he's had some fights since then, right? How come he didn't test positive for it before?
Yeah, and I'm going to say this again. Get that hair test. I don't care that the fight's canceled or you lost the opportunity. They don't get that hair test to exonerate themselves further. I'm suspicious. Bottom line.
But the fight itself, I would, you know, I wanted to see it. I really was kind of leaning toward Wilder. I was kind of like Ortiz. I think he showed some things that, you know, with like, who's that, Malik Scott? I mean, that guy was looking for a place to go to sleep on the canvas, and the ref basically wouldn't let him. And then he finally started fighting, and Ortiz has trouble with movement. You know, if someone's
with you. Me and you might have been in the minority. I also thought Wilder was going to win that fight. Thought range, foot speed, And again, I do understand with one punch Wilder can come falling apart, but I thought he had the physical attributes and the age and the energy to hold him off.
I think as he fights more dangerous opponents, we'll see, like we saw with the first Romain Severn fight. He fought like the best fight of he's ever had. And he mind his P's and Q's. He stayed behind his jab, minded his defense. He was like a different guy than when he feels, the fight is a mismatch. So, yeah, you guys are probably right, but, at least we've got Severn to look forward to. I think it's going to be very exciting, don't you, Nate?
Right.
Yeah,
I can't wait. Maybe, which one do you watch, that or Cotto and Saddam Ali?
Just treat yourself, all of the above.
There you go.
All right, Nate.
One last, you were looking for this, right? So picks for Lubin and Charlo. So
yes.
Gabe, I am with you. I see Lubin is just like sticking that chin up there, just waiting to get knocked off. So I'm a pretty strong favorite in Charlo in that one. So we'll see. And I'm real interested with Trout and Hurd because I just haven't seen enough of Hurd to have a really good opinion. I was not impressed with the Harrison fight just because I knew how Harrison fell apart against Willie Nelson. And so, I wasn't so impressed. But I haven't seen enough of Hurd, so I want to see that.
Okay, Nate, we shall find out. Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. We're for at least another 10 minutes on the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim. Gabe?
510, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. It's Fernando Richmond. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
Doing well.
Good, man. I'm glad to hear it. I want to say one quick thing about narratives. People don't mind them when it's going in their direction. You know what I mean? I'm a big fan of Triple G, but no one seemed to mind when there was a narrative coming out of HBO that he was the greatest thing ever when he was knocking off tomato cans for the most part to start his career, on HBO. So, I mean, it goes both ways, just to be fair. But one last thing. I was wondering, I know we've all talked about Danny Jacobs, even Al Haymon. How does Jarrell Big Baby Davis figure into this? I know he's fighting on the undercard.
Well, he's with Greg Cohen and Dimitri Salida Promotions. I don't believe he's with Al Haymon, not that I know of.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting. He's left Showtime just at the same time as Danny. Just kind of interesting. I don't know. But one last thing also. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this interview, but there's like an interview that Austin Trout does right before the Cotto fight a couple years ago in a bathtub with women in bikinis, which is crazy. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's hilarious. I like the style of Cinemax and SNL.
We'll take your word for it.
Google it. Bath time interview with Austin Davis, man. You'll trip out. It's the craziest thing ever. But anyways, I have a quick question about Gerald Davis. Thank you. I appreciate you guys taking my phone call again.
Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I remember when I interviewed Tyson about signing Erickson Lubin, USA Boxing was all mad at him, and I asked him why would they just go after you like that? And it's like his first answer, and it's like 6:15 in the morning, and it just absolutely like confirms that it's Mike Tyson. He said, "I don't know, I have no idea. Probably someone put them up to it, most likely, because I'm sure they wouldn't have singled me out for something so ludicrous and mundane such as that."
Hey, by the way, aren't they doing some sort of Tyson movie where Jamie Foxx is going to play Mike Tyson?
I've been hearing that for a long time. Apparently they're doing it.
Tyson's good. Jamie's Tyson is very good, by the way.
Very good, yeah. Yeah, he kind of looks like him, kind of got the frame for him. And it's his passion project. He's wanted to do it for years, so I'd watch. Yeah, I've still got that audio. I just about fell out. I was like, yeah, that's Mike Tyson. 209, you're live on the next round. 209? Has dropped. 650, you're live on the next round.
Hey, fellas.
Hello.
Hey, hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry. Hey, I've always been a fan of Romain Severn. I think he's actually...
You're the one, huh?
Exactly, right? I really am. I don't think we're giving him a good enough shot. Has anybody heard anything from the gym, from training camp, on how he's looking? And do you guys give him a shot at all? Because I really do. I think he's going to surprise people. I think he's going to win.
I'd have to give a call to Don House. I would hope he's better prepared this time around. But, again, how many times has he fought since then? I mean, Bermain Stavern remaining once. Number one in the BC is confirmation that Don King still holds a lot of influence in that organization.
He fought once in 2015, that same year in November. He went the distance with Derek Rossi, and I think he went to dinner, and we haven't seen him since. It's hard to – but, you know, he had those two wins against Chris Areola, and it was like he looked like a player. You know, he looked like somebody who was going to be kind of dangerous, a classic-sized heavyweight, at like 6'2", 77-inch reach. But he's got 21 knockouts, 25 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. If he was active, I'd have more faith in him.
Okay. But has there been any reports out of training camp, any scoops about how he's been looking, or has he been
sparring? Can we be honest?
Anything?
I don't think either of us have given a damn to even try to find out.
it's
the truth.
I'm looking on – I'm checking his Instagram, you know. If he's in shape, he probably is – he's probably doesn't really apparently use his Instagram. He doesn't have many followers. Maybe check his Twitter, see if he's put out any videos that show that he's in decent shape. So I don't know, you know. Is he, you know, yeah, I guess we'll check in with Don House and see if Bermain is as big as a house.
Yeah, I'll call Don House. I mean, listen, I heard some of the shenanigans that were going on with Bermain after he won the title. And for a guy to not understand what that title meant to his career and his market value and to behave the way he did, you know, excuse me if I don't give a damn about the guy. Okay?
Ooh. All right. Thanks for the call,
Fireman. Right,
thank you very much. Who's next, Gabe?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, he certainly isn't the first guy to win the belt and then, you know, get fat. I'm curious. I like redemption stories, but I don't know the ins and outs, the behind the scenes. 909, you're live on the next round. 909.
Just calling in to listen.
Thank you.
It's kind of light tonight, so we're going to head to the Central Valley. 209. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. This is Ujo.
Fuji.
What's up, Fuji?
Welcome aboard.
Hey. I was just listening, but I didn't catch most of the show. I'm driving home from work. But Gabe's rendition of Tyson, that was great. That had me rolling. That was great.
Thanks,
man.
the other
thing I was curious about, too, Steve. I saw you at the Open Media workout for Triple G and Canelo. A couple of buddies and I made the trip down there and saw you making the rounds there. And then I saw another report, just, you know, looking for reporters, because I was looking for you guys, and I saw Doug Fisher. And then I spotted, I can't remember her name, but she comes out on, I think, Fino Boxing on YouTube. And so I'm thinking, who are the hottest, you know, boxer girlfriends or boxing reporters that you guys interact with there?
No, I don't. I mean, come on, really?
I'm a married man.
Why not?
So no other women
exist. It's a light day.
Yeah, but listen, do we really need to tell you who's hot or who's not? Really?
When I was single, I was more of a ring card girl kind of guy. I'm a married man, so I don't comment on other women, honestly.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, that's all I had. I was just listening. So.
All right, Beth. No worries. You should have caught me like 5-6 years ago. We would have had a much longer conversation.
You have a pound-for-pound list and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I had a list. You know, I could tell you which beer is my favorite, definitely, even though I don't drink beer. Steve, we have cleared the board. We, about 30 minutes left, and that's it.
You know
sure.
what?
Maybe it was the power outage.
I think I need time to prepare mentally for the beginning of the Mitchell Trubisky era in Chicago. And, whoa, wait a minute. I see floppy, long sleeves. Oh, my God, it's Sam Bradford. All right, what's the over-under? How many plays before he gets hurt tonight?
Seriously.
15, 20.
You
got
to watch
first quarter.
Just warming up. My goodness. Well, the Rams did that to him. It's really just a shame. But, you know, yeah, I didn't catch the game yesterday. It was a little depressing. The Rams finally
five turnovers. They should have won that game. But I got to tell you, though, Gabe, I'm just telling you, Rams, they have something cooking there. Seriously,
yeah.
I like the direction that McVay is taking that franchise. I think that's going to be some fun football there.
They're in every game. You know, even when they lose, they're in it. So that's always a good sign. You know, my dad says 8-8, the kid's going to fade at some point. But
which is fine.
You know, I didn't have any. Yeah, that's
which
fine.
Which is it, absolutely fine, because considering how bad they were, and it's not a Jeff Fisher 8-8. It's an 8-8 with some hope. I think
yeah.
That's a big difference.
They only have one game they're required to win further, as far as I'm concerned, and that's the next Niners game. They only have to win two a year for me, but I think 8-8. That's where we're going to go. But, you know, maybe a little bit more. I really like Cooper Kupp. It's a young team. You know, it kind of reminds me of the beginnings of The Greatest Show on Turf, although I think they had more veteran pieces and were ready to rock. And, you know, Kurt Warner is touchdown Jesus. They just needed to give him the keys. But we'll see. I'm excited.
I just look at some of the stuff McVay does conceptually,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, wow, this guy's impressive. He really is. And if they could just get some consistency, and I think Goff is not going to be a bust, Gabe. I've seen enough where I say, you know what, I still don't think he has the physical upside of a Carson Wentz, but
right.
I think he's good. I think with McVay leading that offense, I think they're going to be a very, very fun team to watch. And last year, the problem wasn't they weren't bad. There's a lot of bad teams. They were boring, Gabe. They really were. This team here, I actually look forward to watching them on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I totally agree. That it's last year was just like, oh, we're watching Jeff Fisher's team. You know, that's not very exciting to me. I mean, each year I was like, didn't they beat this guy in the Super Bowl because
yeah.
he had no imagination? He just had a quarterback that could run. Like, get this guy out of here. Somebody on Twitter actually had a question for us. Juan Valverde. Do you guys think Vitaly Klitschko deserves to be in the Hall of Fame? To me, his signature loss offsets not having a signature win.
Vitaly,
five,
I think
five
both
names.
Klitschko's. And again, I don't know if they're both first ballot, but I think eventually both Klitschko brothers will be in Canastota. I do.
I think Vlad could be a first ballot. I don't think Vitaly could be a first ballot. He didn't win
yeah.
the Lewis fight. It was just a good fight. You know, he didn't really have that defining victory. I think, you know, Vlad certainly, you know, his reign, I think, is what defines him. But five names have been added to the this year's International Boxing Hall of Fame ballot. Klitschko, Eric Morales, Hatton, Wright, and Calderon. I'm not
Gabe,
sure.
Gabe, I saw some
guys.
Stuff. Was there a fighter that almost didn't make weight that looked like death at the scales in Vegas this past weekend or something?
In the UFC, yeah, it was Kevin Lee. He'd eaten, like, some tiramisu the night before. He was bragging about it. And he was going to knock off, like, a ridiculous amount of weight and then, you know, miss by a pound. I don't know what they're doing, but, you know, it seems to me – and, like, Josh Gross, one of my favorite follows on Twitter, he said, you know – and I've said this for a while, but to see somebody of his caliber to me in MMA say it, you know, we have to start thinking about these weight cuts, and if it really should we even do it, or should we just start aligning guys towards being at their best weight on the day of? And like
again,
enough of this up and down.
Everyone says we can't do day of weigh-ins, okay? But you've created this other problem. But I'm just wondering if you're
yeah.
Bob Bennett and you're supposed to be the sheriff of combat sports, you really feel good about letting a guy in that physical state fight? Really?
Yeah, I just don't understand it, you know. Andy Foster, to me, is the beacon. That guy, he's an ex-MMA fighter. He competed. He understands weight cuts. He understands nutrition and is really open to, like, science and new modes of thinking. And he has a whole 10-point system about weight cutting that a few different guys have written about. I'll retweet some of the articles. But I think it's that's like the next frontier next to anti-doping,
yeah, well,
you know?
Gabe, for much criticism as the WBC earns, and I mean earns at times, it's very valid. You know, the stuff they do with the 30-day weigh-in check, the 7-day weigh-in check, that stuff is good.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, they make sure you're kind of on range. They don't want you dropping 20 pounds in 18 hours or whatever they do.
You shouldn't be. That should be completely illegal. And I mean, I don't even think Bermain Severn has been that active on Twitter, much less just kind of gone through his social media just to jump back. Yeah, I don't know where he's been, but, you know, he had a tweet October 6th for this fight, but it's clear that he's not very active talking to people on Twitter. But I don't know if he's in shape, man. Total mystery. He could be bigger than Buster Douglas right now.
Well, he's got about, 3 weeks? 3 weeks, so we'll see. I mean, it's never struck me as exactly how a guy that with a Spartan lifestyle. Well, let's just put it that way. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. We'll be back next week. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and David Duenas and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.